From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. At the end of last month, a cat in Sioux City was found with a nail driven through its head. Miraculously, it's alive and recovering well after surgery. The case has gained a lot of media attention and prompted us to discuss some facets of animal cruelty and abuse this hour. First, we'll get an update on the cat, now dubbed Amazing Grace. Then we ask why we should care about animal abuse. We'll learn about a program that seeks to re-educate animal abusers and find out about the challenges abused and neglected animals face as they move towards adoption. What does our concern about Gracie the cat say about us, the human animal? We'll be back after this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Sioux City officials are still trying to find the person who shot a nail through the head of a cat there. Late last month, the calico cat was turned into Sioux City Animal Control after someone reported it had been living under their car for 3 days. Miraculously, the cat has recovered well after surgery to remove the nail and has been appropriately given the name Amazing Grace. The case has gained a lot of media attention and has prompted us to discuss some facets of animal cruelty and abuse today on The Exchange. Later in the hour, Ken Shapiro of the Animals and Society Institute will talk about why we care about the Sioux City case, the link between animal abuse and violence against people, and rehabilitation programs for adult and juvenile animal abuse offenders. But first, an update on the miraculous case of Amazing Grace. Joining me now, Cindy Rarit, the owner and operator of Sioux City Animal Control, where the cat was turned in. Good afternoon to you, Cindy.
Good afternoon to you. Thanks for having me.
When the cat was turned in, tell us about its condition.
Well, I have been at the shelter for approximately 25 years, and I was not prepared to have seen what I saw that day that Grace came in. We received a call that she was under someone's car for about 3 days, and the person that lived there thought maybe she'd been hit by a car, so they called our officers, at which time we went out, we picked her up, and my officer brought her in and set her on the desk. But what was ironic about it is he set her on the desk, right on my desk, and she was purring and rubbing up against me, and yet I looked at her, and right between her eyes was this nail that was completely flush with her forehead. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but it is a 3.5-inch nail that was removed from her skull, and it was just flush with her forehead. Her eye had a little bit of trauma to it, but again, her spirits were just undaunting. She just didn't want to give up, and she was loving on everybody, which amazes me if that someone could have taken her and done this to her, and that for her to have faith in mankind again was just unbelievable to me.
So could you see the nail coming out of the back of Grace's head?
No, the nail had not penetrated the skull entirely. However, you could feel the nail trying to push through the skin in the back of her skull.
Okay. And she had, the cat had been suffering under this car for at least 3 days, we know.
Yes, she was thin. She ate right away, drank right away. She was very happy to be alive and in the safe arms of ourselves. And then we immediately ran her to the veterinarian. And the veterinarian here in town had never seen anything like that either. We had told him that she was coming in with this injury, and he said, I anticipated seeing a cat that was in very, very poor and critical condition. And he said, here she was. She came up to the front of the cage and just rubbed, and he said, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So she has helped all of us restore our faith in humanity that no matter what happens, you just keep struggling on, and you just have to have faith in mankind. And she did, and she made it through, and she's doing very, very well.
What is the name of the vet?
Siouxland Animal Hospital, and it would be Dr. Salisbury and Dr. Merritt.
Mm-hmm. So they, Grace underwent surgery. Anything you learned from the vet about the particulars about the surgery, since they don't face this every day?
Right. The veterinarians contacted me, and they said the same thing. They see different cases on a daily basis of neglect and animal welfare issues, but never had they seen anything like this. So they took some x-rays, which I don't know if you guys have gotten a copy of the x-rays.
I have seen them, yes.
They're quite interesting, and how she made it through that is unbelievable. And they told me They were unsure whether she was going to make it through the surgery, that we could rush her to Iowa State, but they were willing to do the surgery. They felt that they could take it out successfully, which they did. And the only paralysis that she received from it was the nail did penetrate the cornea. And so she may or may not lose her eye at this point. We're just waiting to see what actually happens. But her spirits were never undaunting. She's just been a great, great cat.
Where is Grace right now?
Grace has found her forever home. It was a long process. We probably had 20 people call us from all over the country wanting to adopt Grace. The outpouring of support, not only from our community, but from all over the United States, has just been unbelievable. We've gotten her vet bill taken care of, and then some. So for future animals that come in that are injured and abused, that the excess donations will go towards their care as well.
Would you care to say, put a round figure on how much has come in Grace's name to support also other animals?
It was around $1,500. And unfortunately, yesterday, that covers her bill, but we also had another cat that came in yesterday that had some children had poked a stick into its eye. So one of the people that were on our list to adopt Grace, since they weren't the ones chosen, we called them, and they are in the process of trying to adopt that cat.
What leads are to finding the person who did this to the cat? I understand there's a reward.
There is. The Humane Society of the United States, along with our local chapter of the Humane Society and other private donors, have stepped up, along with Crime Stoppers here in Sioux City, and they have offered a $4,000 reward for the apprehension and of the person or persons responsible for this crime. They will be prosecuted criminally, so if we get any information, they will be prosecuted. Thus far, though, to my knowledge, there has been no information leading to that arrest or conviction of the person or persons responsible.
What can you say, what are your personal thoughts about the mindset of someone who could do this to a cat?
You know, again, I've been here a long time, 25 years, and I don't understand the mindset of people, and I don't think I ever will, and nor do I want to. I just don't understand what would lead them to do something like this to an animal. It amazes me each and every day when I see these animals come in, the level of cruelty that exists in our society, and it's just incomprehensible to me.
This is certainly an unusual and a miraculous case that has gained a lot of media attention, but how many cases of animal abuse do you come across in your work, say, every week?
Oh, I would say on a weekly basis, there's at least 5 to 10 cases a week that we work on different levels of an animal starving or being abused or neglected. Grace's case, of course, is to the extreme, but I have seen and could tell you stories that would just make your hair curl. It's just unbelievable.
This is certainly animal abuse and cruelty, but is there a definition you go by where other cases may be borderline animal abuse, where the owner, the person who did it, may not even think it's abuse?
Right. A lot of it is education, informing the public of what the law actually states and what their responsibilities are as pet owners. Education is a huge part of what we do. And as far as the cruelty aspect, you know, cruelty to animals go hand in hand with people abuse as well. So there's a direct correlation between the two, and it's concerning. Somebody that could do this to this cat, I'm very concerned as to what they could do to another person or individual. That becomes very concerning to me.
What should a person do if they think an animal is being abused in their own neighborhood?
Definitely they need to contact the authorities. If they don't have an animal, local animal control agency or humane society, they need to contact the sheriff's department or the police department and report it right away. Sometimes, like you said, what you may describe as cruelty may not be to me, but if you think that there's a problem, it should always be reported.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Cindy Rarrett, the owner and operator of Sioux City Animal Control, where Grace the cat was turned in with a nail through her head. The nail was removed, and Grace has recovered and found a new home happily. Are you surprised at the media attention this has gained? How many places across the United States have shown interest, media?
Well, it hasn't just been in the United States. London Times has picked it up as well. People Magazine has contacted me, and the Today Show has contacted me. I think people are just appalled, and they cannot believe that someone, first off, would do something like this, and secondly, that such an injury could be repaired, and her coming out of it with her spirits undaunted and just the whole case is just amazing to me, which is why I was doing an interview and she didn't have a name. And the name Amazing Grace came to me because the story is amazing. And if you know how the psalm goes, was blind, but now I see. So hopefully we're hoping that eyesight will come back. And she was named rightfully so.
What do you think the interest in this case, the huge interest from across the country, across the world in this case, says about us, the human animal?
She has given us hope that even though bad things can happen to you, you still can't lose faith in the human spirit. Whoever did this to her, they're going to have to deal with that in their conscience. But she never gave up, and she never lost faith in people. And I think that sends a huge message to everybody. I know for ourselves, we see so many bad things that happen on a regular basis, that for her to come in and just have faith in us that we were going to get her taken care of and that everything was going to be okay, and it turned out to be okay, and she went to a home. The man that adopted her just sobbed when he saw her because she came up to him, and it's like she had missed him her whole life, like she'd known him. It was just absolutely incredible. It was so heartwarming to see the two together, and the whole story was just, it's an absolutely heartwarming story.
With so many people wanting to adopt Grace, how did you go about choosing the person?
That was very difficult. We had to call references. We did house visits. We spoke with them individually. They went up and saw her. They visited her. Not all of them, of course, that didn't live here, but we wanted to find the best home for her where maybe she would be an only cat. She wouldn't have to compete for affection. You know, they have to have the financial capabilities of following up because she does have to have that eye taken care of. So there were a lot of different factors, but we made home visits and re-interviewed and checked references. And it was very difficult because everybody loved her and everybody wanted her. So since that time, for the people that didn't get her, we're calling them and telling them that we have other stories. We have other cats. We have other dogs that have their own stories and if they'd be interested in adopting them. And some of them are stepping up to the plate and doing just that.
Cindy Rarrett, thank you very much for telling us Grace's story and sharing your thoughts. Cindy Rarrett, thank you so much. Owner and operator of Sioux City Animal Control.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll talk with Ken Shapiro of the Animals and Society Institute. He'll give us his thoughts on why we care about the Sioux City case, the link between animal abuse and violence against people, and rehabilitation programs for adult and juvenile offenders. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.
Straight cats sitting on a fence. Ain't got enough dough to pay the rent. I'm flat broke, but I don't care. I strut right by with my tail in the air. Straight cats strut, I'm a feeling Casanova. Garbage can.
Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. The miraculous story of Grace, a Sioux City cat that had a nail shot into her head, underwent surgery, and is now hopefully, probably purring in the lap of her new owner. And this has prompted us to spend an hour talking about different facets of animal abuse, pet abuse, and what the worldwide interest in this particular case tells us about us, human animals. Joining us now by phone, Ken Shapiro, Executive Director of the Animals and Society Institute based in Michigan. Ken Shapiro joining us. Good afternoon, Ken.
Good afternoon.
Cindy Rarrett in Sioux City, you just listened to that conversation with her, told us that Grace the Cat has received this national, even international attention. Why do we care about this particular case in Sioux City? Why has it struck such a chord?
Well, one way of thinking about it is that people identify a companion animal in their home as a member of their family. Studies show that something like 80% of the people who, when asked how many individuals there are in their family, will include the cat or the dog. So people identify with these animals and feel very strongly about their well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think also, as was pointed out, people are just taken aback by the apparent degree of cruelty. So we have both the love and the fascination with the hate, if you will.
How long have you been at the Animals and Society Institute?
I've been involved in this organization and its predecessor organization since 1981.
That's a long time. I wonder, with this stretch of perspective that you have, would there have been the same reaction had this happened 20 or 30 years ago? Or has our awareness, our sensitivity towards animals, our pets, changed in any way?
Good question. We've always been fascinated with animals, and animal stories are amongst the first stories we ever told, from the caves way back in caveman France, if you will. So we've always been fascinated with animals. I think, however, in modern times, people are becoming more aware of the relationship, as was mentioned, between human violence, violence towards humans, and violence towards animals. And again, the fact that they're part of the family, this sort of raises people's interests even more.
So go into that. What do we know about the connection, any scientific studies about the connection between those who would abuse animals and the violence that such an abuser might bring against other people?
Yes. Well, in the last 20 years, beginning with some very high-profile FBI serial killer cases in which the serial killers were found by the FBI to have a history of animal abuse. Since then, the social science folks have been looking more closely at the relationship between child abuse, spousal abuse, more recently elder abuse, and animal abuse. And there's a pretty clear association or correlation. In other words, if in a family one of these kinds of abuse occurs, it's more likely that the others will as well. So that is pretty much established. The exact mechanisms whereby that occurs are still being worked out. It's also very important if you've witnessed animal abuse. That also has some very potent effects on individuals.
That can either sensitize or desensitize you.
That's exactly right. It can either produce a kind of post-traumatic symptom, or it can, as you just said, it can provide a model. Well, if this is the way people do things, solve problems through violence, I guess that's the way I'll proceed as well.
I remember interviewing a known researcher on the sociopathic disorders, antisocial disorders, and it seems to me that there was a linkage there, too, with in early childhood, that when we traced back people with antisocial disorders, in almost all of their childhoods, you saw cruelty toward animals.
Yes, the sociopath is sort of one diagnosis that we might find if we started assessing these folks who abuse animals, but it's not by any means the only one. Just in the garden variety, if you will, family, when we find issues around control and dominance, we find animal abuse, and we find folks who are controlling other members of the family, including the animal, in ways that can become abusive. So there's a number of sort of diagnoses that can be associated with this. That's why it's very important in any case to do a full assessment of the individual psychologically. And we now have such instruments that have been developed. And we also have some therapy approaches for dealing with these folks once we've assessed them. And that's one of the things that Animals and Society Institute has been involved in since the late 90s. A treatment called Anacare, animal care, in which we have pretty good success working with these folks, whether juvenile or adult, in changing that behavior so that instead of using animal abuse to satisfy their needs for control or to get their own needs met, they use more pro-social kinds of...
So tell me in more detail the type of mindset that you encounter when someone enters Anacare, and how you rehabilitate that mind to be more have more empathy towards animals and prevent suffering instead of cause it.
Okay. Like anything else, there's a whole spectrum of mindsets, if you will. But in a typical case, we have a male who is controlling his family for various reasons, controlling their access to other folks, controlling their access to the benefits of being in the family. And part of that control sometimes involves using the animal as a vehicle to threaten or intimidate other members of the family. So that's a fairly typical kind of mindset, if you will. That is, I can convey to you, other members of the family, that if you do something that I don't agree with, that something's going to happen to you in the same way in which something has happened or has been threatened to happen to the companion animal. So that's one fairly common set of ideas, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, and your listeners are, with spousal abuse, the same kind of control of the other.
We have about 2 minutes left before we have to say goodbye. How can you teach empathy, change this mindset in your program?
You know, that's again a more than a two-minute response. But empathy is considered to be a skill, and it can be taught. It's a way of listening to another person. We've got some research that shows that it's really pretty hardwired. That is from a pretty early age. If I see you rubbing your arm, I'm also stimulated by that, in the sense that part of my brain that would be activated if I rub my own arm is rubbed if I see you do it. So empathy is part of us. In some ways, we learn not to empathize, so that the skill is forgotten and we have to relearn it. But we have a number of techniques that allow you to begin to identify with, empathize with an animal, and eventually with the animal that you abused. So that if we were working with this person who did this horrible thing with Grace, we would be assessing the degree to which they have sense of their own feelings, they have the sense of the feelings of others, and begin to show them that there's another being on the other end of that, and that they can appreciate the feelings and the needs of that other being, and so that the empathy then is the groundwork for better, more compassionate behavior.
Now, if someone hears this conversation and recognizes someone in their own family that might have some of these qualities, they can find out more information, I would imagine, at your website of the Animals and Society Institute.
Yes, the website is animalsandsociety.org, and there's considerable material on the violence connection, on the empathy connection, on Anacare itself.
Okay. Yep. Ken Shapiro, we have to go. I want to thank you very much for joining our conversation.
My pleasure.
Ken Shapiro, Executive Director of the Animals and Society Institute. When we come back, we continue our discussion about animal abuse and rehabilitation with a number of people, and we hope you as well. Do you have an experience with a pet that was abused? We'd like you to share your story in our second half hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be right back. And we're back with The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer. Join us Monday on this program when my guest is psychiatrist and professor of psychiatry, Dr. Daniel Carlett. In his new book, Unhinged, he says psychiatry has changed from a profession in which we try to understand people, talk to them, into a profession that diagnoses disease and medicates. We'll also be joined by professor of psychiatry, Robert Philibert of the University of Iowa. Discussion of the profession, the field of psychiatry, Monday on The Exchange. Today, talking about animal abuse and rehabilitation this hour, the rehabilitation of the abusers and the rehabilitation of the animals who have been abused. This discussion prompted by the case of Grace. The Sioux City cat used up at least one of her 9 lives when someone shot a nail into her head. She survived, had the nail removed, and now is living happily together with her human companion. Joining us now, Tom Colvin, the executive director of the Animal Rescue League of Iowa from our Des Moines studio. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good morning.
We've just crossed over into the afternoon hours, Tom. And
better catch up.
I tell you, always saying, is Des Moines on a different time zone? And I checked, it's not. Last I checked, Tom, you have a program that looks into how abused animals can be recovered, rehabilitated, made to be perfectly good companions. Tell us about what happens to abused animals once they're recovered.
Yes, and actually you've got a couple of quite distracted guests today, because we'll get into that a little bit later and tell you why.
You've got a furry critter with you.
We do. We have an adorable little kitten in here that we're playing with and, getting distracted. But at any rate, situations like the little kitten that we're going to be talking about that we have in the studio here today. When we come across animal abuse and situations where just basically some time and tender, loving care can be given to the pets. That's what we basically have as our TLC program, where they can go into a home and be rehabilitated.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your kitty. Does your kitty have a name? Because your kitten, unfortunately, for unfortunate reasons, got into the news. This is one of the six surviving kittens, actually one of six kittens, the only survivor in six kittens. That were discovered Wednesday morning?
That's correct, yeah. And they basically were found in a garbage bag, found at Waste Management when one of their trucks came in and was dumping its load, and ended up finding this bag full of kittens. And Allie, who is with us, a little female, about 6 weeks old, who we have in the studio, and certainly goes to the subject material today.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody obviously put this whole litter in the trash, and Allie was the only survivor.
Mm. Can Allie be held up to the microphone? Does Allie talk at such a tender age?
She was talking quite a bit. Mary, the other guest here today, has certainly got her playing quite a bit.
Okay,
here.
Let's introduce Mary Neubauer. With the Heartland Gray House Adoption Organization. Good afternoon to you, Mary.
Good morning, and it's Gray. Or good afternoon, and it's Greyhound, not Gray House. But you were close. So
okay.
I'm usually dealing with.
Hey,
with
Tom got the time zone wrong, so I'm
exactly.
Doing pretty well.
Okay. We're all on track here. I'm usually dealing with animals a little bit bigger than Allie, but I have torn up a bunch of pieces of paper, and she is just playing all over the table. And if one of us suddenly goes off the air, it's because she's also chewing on the wires here in the studio.
Oh, no.
She's a
Keep
kitten.
Her away from
she's
those.
Having a, she's having an absolutely great time here, so that's good. And it's so nice to hear that she is still with us, and she's just a perfect example of the kinds of animals that we're talking about. My group gets greyhounds off the racetrack when their racing careers are done, and then we get them ready to go to their forever homes. Many of the dogs have been treated very well at the track. I'm certainly not insinuating there's Allie.
I'm sorry, Mary. I'm being distracted by that lovely voice behind you.
Never mind me. Exactly. Never mind me. Many of the dogs have been very well cared for, but some of them have been abused, and we have a lot of work to do with them. You have to try to teach them to trust people again and to get them to understand that people are okay.
Mm-hmm. So the greyhounds that have been in racing typically have what sort of behavioral problems, for instance?
Well, the greyhounds that are coming off the track, first of all, when they come to us, it's the first time that they've ever been in a home. They have generally just been in what racing crates or the kennels that you would keep your dog in at home, a wire kennel. So they've been in a home for the first time when we get them, and you have to teach them everything about being in a home. They don't know how to walk up and down stairs, for example, and they don't know what a dog bed is. You have to show them, no, you can go lay on that nice soft pillow over there in the corner. And most importantly, you have to teach them what windows are. You don't think about that with a normal dog or a dog that's been in a home before, but you have to teach them that there's glass in that window and you can't run through the window, and glass in the door. You can't run through the door. So those are some important safety things that we have to teach them right away. And then for the ones that you know, maybe haven't been treated as well. There's just, as Tom said, a lot of TLC, a lot of just being really gentle with them and working with them. Sometimes it can take a few days, a few weeks. One of my own greyhounds was abused at the track where he raced, and it took months for him to finally trust people. And you just have to keep working with them just every day, just being as kind and gentle as you can until they'll finally trust you.
Tom Colvin, we talked specifically about greyhounds there, but what other sort of problems do people typically face when they try to adopt animals that have been abused?
Well, you know, keep in mind that abuse is not just dogs and cats. You know, we're dealing with actually six horses that have been neglected, severely neglected at the Animal Rescue League. So it cuts across all species. And, you know, so there can be a variety of situations. Now, Allie, fortunately, is very trusting of people, definitely likes people, and always feels better when she's around people. But, you know, like Mary said, you know, a lot of the socialization type of situations you have to deal with kind of teach them to be dogs, teach them to be horses, teach them to be cats, you know, because they've often been in very unusual situations, environments that don't allow for them to really learn proper behavior and that type of thing. But, you know, I certainly don't want to create a situation where people would be necessarily afraid to adopt an animal that's been abused. You know, certainly that's where the organization that you adopt from is going to make sure it's a good match, make sure that, you know, you are ready for the problems that might arise. But, you know, by all means, don't be afraid to adopt an animal that's actually been abused. It just may require a little more time, some more patience, you know, that type of thing.
But the benefit that you get out of it and the good feeling that you get out of it when you see that animal making progress is so well worth it. It warms your heart like hardly anything else.
Absolutely.
Speaking from personal experience.
Absolutely.
Mary Neubauer is the is of the organization Heartland Greyhound Adoption. Tom Colvin, executive director of the Animal Rescue League of Iowa. And Allie is of to be determined. She'll find a, she's probably got a lot of fans out there right now who would love to have her.
Does.
And joining our discussion as well, Janet Ashman of the Johnson County Humane Society. Good afternoon to you, Janet.
Good afternoon. Hi, Mary. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Hi. Welcome.
Janet here in Iowa City with me. You're in Des Moines, Tom and Mary. And I want to ask Janet, because listening to that kitty there, listening to Allie there, that's a familiar sound to you. You have a lot of stories of cats that you have fostered. Tell us about one specific story that stands out in your mind.
Well, the one that stands out in my mind the most is probably because she's currently up for adoption right now. She's a very small cat. Her name is Angel, and she was shot. And whoever shot her in the shoulder and partially destroyed that joint. So she has quite the limp. We don't know who shot her or what the circumstances were. She showed up out at a farm in rural Oxford, and the people there were nice, and they tamed her down. Especially their daughter worked with this cat a lot until she could get her into a pet taxi and bring her to a vet clinic. And we took x-rays, found out what the deal was with her shoulder. She's been with us ever since. She's a charming animal, and you would think she would never want to be around humans again. But she's very loving. She's rather solemn. I think she's going to be a great cat for somebody.
Mm-hmm. How many animals will connect their abuser with all of humanity and hold a grudge?
I don't think very many of them do. It's that unconditional love. And sometimes you wonder how they could still maintain those kind of feelings toward us, because we're bigger than they are, and we have the ability to do awful things to them. And I find that very sad, but they love us no matter what. It's pretty amazing.
Tom Coleman of Animal Rescue League of Iowa, what constitutes in our state, maybe it doesn't vary between states, but in our state, what constitutes abuse of an animal?
Well, basically, it's kind of split into sort of three categories. One is what you don't do for the pet, which would be falling under the neglect situation, withholding food, water, or in the case of dogs and cats, shelter, mm-hmm. would fall under the category of abuse. The other part is what would what you would do to an animal, which is, you know, hit, you know, kick, something that would cause severe injury, even death. And then we recently, fairly recently, we have worked on legislation to pass an additional area, and that is what's called torture. And to rise to that level, we're talking about specific acts that are done in a sadistic nature for the purpose of seeing that animal suffer. And unfortunately, Jan and I have actually seen over the years cases of actual torture.
So right now, this bill that has been introduced, why do we need that? Why doesn't the present law take care of that sufficiently, you feel?
Well, we feel that it actually rises to an entire different level from, you know, maybe withholding some food or water. We're talking horrendous situations. And actually, this actually has passed. It's not to the level of punishment that we were hoping for. We're actually hoping for the first offense of animal torture would result in a felony classification. And unfortunately, the legislature has only passed that if you do it a second time, caught a second time, that you would actually reach the level of felony.
And the key is you have to be caught doing it again.
Exactly.
Janet.
Drives me wild.
Janet, you have experience with that being a difficult thing to prove.
Absolutely. I think the case that Tom was referring to was the Noah's Ark cat bludgeonings probably about 15 years ago, Tom.
Yeah, it's probably been that long.
When 23 cats, teenagers, broke into a shelter in southern Iowa, and they bludgeoned 23 cats to death with baseball bats. It was awful.
I think you heard a little bit earlier in our conversation Ken Shapiro talking about what this indicates about the mindset of a person who is doing this. Your comments on that, Tom? From your perspective?
You know, I'm sorry, I didn't hear his comments. From our observation, you know, it is, you know, the concern always is the animal abuse may lead to human abuse and human torture type of situations. In other words, you know, the studies I've seen, it seems like they're practicing on the animals. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, to be quite honest, that connection is what we get the legislators to listen to for the most part, and certainly a lot of the general public. For Jan and Mary and I, you know, the mere fact they would do it to an animal is horrendous enough to deserve the punishment, mm-hmm. or certainly put people on the radar. But, you know, it is that connection that definitely gets most everyone concerned.
For the benefit of understanding that mindset, getting behind it, have any of you had a direct conversation with someone who has been an abuser of animals, had an experience with that person that you came mm-hmm. away from that conversation? Janet, you're mm-hmm. shaking your head. You said, I understand what's going on in that head.
I think a lot of it has to do with, as a society, we are becoming more and more increasingly out of touch with nature. And you talk to some of these folks who have done bad things, and they lack the empathy, they lack the compassion. You wonder how they get along in the world. It frightens me.
Mm. What about
most
you, Tom?
Mm-hmm. It most often seems to be a control mechanism.
Yeah, very often a domination thing, yeah.
You're right, right. Whether they felt controlled themselves in the past or just, you know, that's what excites them, you know, mm-hmm. is that sense of control.
I want to ask you about a recent report in the news that we heard from the end of last month, the end of May. The Mason County Sheriff now certain that dozens of dogs reported missing in Madison, mm-hmm. Guthrie, Warren, and Dallas counties were stolen from their families. He says, the sheriff there says they're dealing with a criminal enterprise, 30 to 50 stolen dogs. The investigation is evolving, according to this report, which is several days old. And so how often do you run into criminal abuse of animals? Why, mm-hmm. for instance, Tom, would someone want to steal dozens of dogs? What value do they have?
Well, they can unfortunately go to a lot of situations, and very few of them good, you know. Unfortunately, there is an industry that would allow dogs to be picked up and sold to research laboratories.
Right.
There is situations where dog fighters will use dogs other than those designed and bred for the pit for practice dogs. You know, and then there's also, you know, some strong suspicions that some of the purebreds, and in the Madison County situation, it sounded like they were kind of focusing on Labradors, yeah, that maybe they be maybe going into breeding facilities for either hunting or, you know, some type of intent to then sell puppies.
In most communities, go ahead. This is Mary, right?
Yeah. Here in Iowa a few years ago, there was a really widespread organization up in northeastern Iowa that purported to be adopting greyhounds, as my group actually does, only that group was taking the greyhounds and selling them into animal research. And that was discovered, and there were criminal penalties brought in that case. But it just goes to show, as Tom has mentioned, the really wide range of uses, if that's the right mm-hmm. word, that, yeah, that people can be looking for with animals that you really need to be on the lookout for and researching the organization through which you're considering adopting an animal, or even, you know, if you're buying an animal from a private organization, you really need to look into it to make sure that you understand that group and know what its motives and how it's operating.
So let me picture this, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who are dog, cat owners, pet owners who are scared right now, thinking that their dog, cat is going to be lifted from behind their fence. It's going to be clipped from a line that's out in front of the house. Is this typically what happens?
Well, typically what we're hearing and seeing and you know, is the rural situations where they're just kind of patrolling the country roads and finding dogs that, you know, maybe are on their owner's property.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of easy to come up to, and they can take them very quickly. You know, it's like most things. If they have to work very hard to steal the pet, oftentimes that is somewhat of a deterrent. But it can happen in urban environments, and we hear about gates being clipped and one thing and another. And so I tell you, one of the things that we're advocating very hard and have for many years is microchipping. It's a permanent method of identification. You know, is it going to keep somebody from stealing your pet? No, very likely it's not going to keep them from stealing your pet. But if your pet is ever found somehow or another, you're going to need that identification to get that pet back to you.
Have you found, Tom, that instances statewide of animal abuse have been increasing?
I would have to say that I think that people reporting animal abuse is increasing. I'm not sure whether that is, you know, existent to the fact that, you know, there's more animal abuse. But I do feel like people feel like their complaints are going investigated. They are being investigated and something is actually happening. So, you know, Jan and Mary, I wonder if you are seeing that same thing, that just more people are.
Jen.
I think that's true. I think the more we get out there and educate people about their pets and about what responsible guardianship is, what I usually say is, do you know where your 2-year-old is? Do you know where your dog is?
Mm-hmm.
They're like 2-year-olds with 4 feet, you know? You got to think of them that way.
Mary, something
well,
to add to that? Yeah.
Sure. I also think that the new laws that have been passed in recent years and just the debate about the laws and the proposals up at the State House have helped with this situation as well, because it's just calling more attention to it, shedding a light on animal abuse that maybe hadn't been there before. It's certainly giving people more tools to use in mm-hmm. terms of prosecution. But just having the conversation makes people aware that, oh, there is something that's going on there. It's something that I can report. It's something that I can do something about,
mm-hmm.
which I think people are looking for is what do I do if I know that there's animal abuse going on? How do I report it?
If you suspect it, what should you do in your community? What should you do in your community, Mary, if you do?
certainly contact your local law enforcement, and they can refer you to organizations that either rescue dogs, as my organization does, or organizations like the Animal Rescue League here in Des Moines, or certainly Johnson County Humane Society. They can refer you to the folks who can help in that regard, and certainly become involved themselves if there is something criminal going on.
Just about a minute left. Tom Colvin, I want to ask you this question. How do Iowa's laws compare with other states on the issue of animal abuse? Are there other states you would think Iowa would be good to emulate?
Yes, in different laws for different situations. And, you know, ours is quite conservative. Our laws are very conservative, and that usually tracks along with an agricultural state where, you know, the farmer is going to worry whether some animal protection thing for dogs is going to affect how they treat animals on the farm. It kind of goes along with that. But there are laws across the country that we would certainly like to emulate and, you know, bring to Iowa. And we'll be working on that in the future, quite frankly.
Thank you very much. That's all the time we have. Thank you very much. Tom Colvin, Executive Director of the Animal Rescue League of Iowa, Janet Ashman of the Johnson County Humane Society, and Mary Neubauer of Heartland Greyhound Adoption. Thank you all for this discussion.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You. And Allie.
And Allie.
I forgot. How could I forget? Well, she hadn't piped up for a while. Have a good life, Allie. Hope you find a great companion. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Also from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange, available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.